I do it a few Kleenex because my nose keeps running and running and running and running and running. It's going to get there before me. Anyway, I've got to recite this next bit to the air of Teddy Bear's Picnic. All right, so if you go down to the river today, you're in for a big surprise. If you go down to the river today, be sure to shield your eyes for a beautiful white flower that might look so grand when it's picked, just might burn your hand. Today's the day, we warn you before you have a picnic.
Well done.
It's very hard to do when you have a bit of a fluey thing. Anyway, the weather is very nice and it's very mild. And it's sunny in places. I sound like a weather forecaster. Like
you do.
Nula. And there's nothing nicer than heading down to your local waterway for a dip or a stroll in weather like this. But today we are warning you about a pretty looking flower that can burn. Mooney listener David Gillick reminded us of its dangers in an email recently. He was out running in Kildare when he briefly brushed against a plant he didn't recognise and a few hours later erupted into painful blisters. David realised he had been in contact with a giant hogweed, a non-native species that excretes a phototoxic sap. He wrote, "I was personally shocked to learn of the existence of this type of plant. I believe I'm now more than qualified to say it poses a serious public health risk. Contact with the eyes can lead to blindness. I've attached a few photos of the offending plant and of the results of my run-in with what I feel is a plant sent straight from the gardens of hell." Pretty serious stuff. Anyway, you can see those pictures on our website. So now you can identify with the giant hogweed if you come across it. And David Gillick asked us to spread the word. So Aina went off to meet Joe Caffrey, senior researcher with the Inland Fisheries, to see the plant in the flesh, so to speak.
Here I am, standing on the banks of the River Talca. And on both sides of the banks, there's wonderful wild flora. I'm sure there's fauna here as well, although since I came, I haven't seen anything moving. But there's lovely, lovely willow leaning over into the ground. I'm looking just at a big buddleia bush just here beside me, and more buddleia across with the lovely purple flowers that the butterflies like to be in. And of course, the reason why I'm here at all is I'm here to meet Dr. Joe Caffrey, Senior Research Officer with the Inland Fisheries. Joe, how nice to meet you.
Thank you very much, Anna. Lovely to meet you, and a lovely day.
And Joe didn't, I'm afraid, bring me for a romantic walk along by the banks of the river. Joe wants to show me something that's rather nasty. Now, it doesn't look nasty, and I'm standing here beside it. A most beautiful plant, tall, bigger than we are, 3 metres high, with the most beautiful umbrellas of flowers, big white circles of flowers on it. And I'm looking at the insects coming and landing on the flowers, so they obviously like it. But Joe doesn't. Joe, what is the plant and why don't you like it?
No, I think a very good reason not to like it. This is a plant called the giant hogweed, Heracleum mantigazanium. What a horrible Latin name. But it's a plant that was brought in as an exotic curiosity probably 120, 130 years ago. As you rightly observed, it's a very impressive looking plant. It stands to maybe 4 metres in height. It carries a nasty package, unfortunately, while it is very, very pretty. And kids are tempted to play with it because it has these big hollow stems.
But it's like really an enormous version of the ordinary hogweed and cow parsley that we see in hedges around the country in the month of June. Now, the cow parsley Queen Anne lace is very elegant and fine. Hogweed is a bit coarser, but they grow up and down the country. And as you said, the hollow stems are frequented by earwigs in the wintertime. That's where they overwinter. Right. But you can make wonderful pea shooters out of them.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, while the giant hogweed is a giant and the hollow stems can be up to 10 centimetres wide, as I've shown you here, kids still have used these as pea shooters, but with disastrous consequences. I mentioned about the sap. Apparently quite innocent, and it's painless to touch. So you can actually brush against the plant, you can break the plant, get sap on your arms or wherever. You won't know that you are likely to be burned.
So it's not stinging like a nettle, you would not know anything.
It's completely painless. Yeah. But it induces a condition called phototoxodermatitis. And basically this is its chemical reaction that sensitizes the skin to ultraviolet A radiation, which is very prominent in sunlight. So where you get sap on your, let's say your arm, because that's the most likely place, it basically impairs the skin's ability to filter ultraviolet A. So you're not getting a chemical burn. What you're getting is a very bad sunburn. So effectively, the melanin has been denatured and you burn.
And does this take long to cure now?
Unfortunately, it can be permanent. And that's one of the reasons that we're really terribly worried about this. And it's I'm delighted that, you know, Mooney is introducing it again. I know it was done maybe a number of years ago, but it's very important. This plant is still very prominent in various parts of Ireland.
I mean, it's known to be this terribly dangerous plant, and people do like to walk beside the river. Is there no way of treating it? I mean, why are we still seeing it? I mean, why is it not got rid of? Is it very difficult to get rid of? How does it spread?
It can be difficult to get rid of. I started working this plant maybe in the early 90s. One of our fishery staff got badly burned by it. Somebody recognised the fact that I had a botanical qualification, God forgive me, so I was assigned the task. Go and find a cure for this, Joe. So I did some work. I worked on the Talca. I worked on rivers like the Mulcair.
Which is down in Limerick.
Down in Limerick. Yeah. And we did a coordinated programme, basically trying to find weak links in the plant first and then target them for control.
And so, this was not known anywhere. I mean, you couldn't just look up the literature and see what they had done in other countries, because this is not a native plant. This was brought in from where was it brought?
Brought in from the Caucasus Mountains, down in southwest Russia. Mm. And as I said, it was the gentry of old, back in the 1800s, late 1800s in particular, and they found this exotic-looking plant.
That's right. They were making their gardens in front of their big houses have architectural plants, and they brought in gunnera as well, that giant
That's
rhubarb.
Right.
So standing in your crinoline on the window looking out, your garden looked magnificent. But these tall plants.
Absolutely.
And they had no idea that it was anything. Of course, they weren't making pea shooters out of them, were they?
Sure. Not at all. And it's interesting that the distribution in Ireland is very closely linked with domains and estates. So normally, you'll find a domain, and downstream of that, giant hogweed on the rivers.
So why is it so close to the river? What has the river got to do with the spread of it?
The seeds. The seeds on the giant hogweed, where the plants we're looking at now are heavily in flower, but they haven't produced seeds yet. But you may be familiar with the seeds. The seeds are large. They would be probably 2 centimetres in...
Yeah,
flat, large seeds.
Yeah.
So,
but there's loads of them. Every one of those little flowers on the white head produces a seed.
Each umbel.
Yeah, so you could have maybe 100 ones on each umbel.
Sure. Each plant is capable. Now, we tediously went through it many, many years ago when I had students to do the counting for me. And we estimated that a good average would be 50,000 seeds per mature plant. So the plants grow, the life cycle is roughly 4 years. This was all part of, I studied this as part of trying to find a control mechanism for the plant. It's very important to understand the biology, because the biology here in Ireland is going to be very different than it was in Russia. So what we learned about the plant is that the average life cycle is 4 years. It tends to grow for 4 years, grows through the year, dies back fully into a deep taproot in winter, come February or so, begins to grow again. And in its fourth year, it's normally its fourth year, it will grow from zero height to 4 metres in height, producing an enormous amount of biomass in terms of stem, leaf, flower and seed.
So it only flowers in the fourth year.
In
it's
the
building
fourth
up
year
strength for the other 3 years to go for the 50,000 seeds.
And that's exactly what it's doing. Once it seeds, it's a monocarpic plant, it dies.
Yeah.
So the plant seeds and dies. There was the weak link I was looking for in the research. Theoretically, armchair biologists would say, well, if you can stop it seeding for 4 years, well then, you know, technically you could eradicate the plant. One of the slight problems is that there is a dormancy period, and the plants can live, and I say can live, for maybe 15 to 20 years in the soil. But again, research has shown that the vast majority of the seeds will either germinate in the first year or the second year, and those that don't, the majority of them will die.
Yeah, so therefore this plant grows for 4 years, dumps 50,000 seeds
dies.
The seeds all float down the river, and next year you've got 20,000 plants, maybe 30,000 of them die.
That's right. They
will take 4 years and do the same, carry on again.
Sure. But that's why they prefer rivers. A river is a corridor, it's a moving corridor. So the plants are heavy, and even in strong wind, they tend not to blow more than 10 metres from the parent plant. Whereas if they can drop into a river, they can be brought way, way downstream.
Oh, yeah, it's all very clever. I was coming home yesterday in the car up from Wicklow on the N11. And what did I see? Just south of Bray, exit north, on the motorway. Only two of these plants. How can it be on the motorway, Joe?
I'm puzzled. When you told me that, I was puzzled. Except near where I live, which there's an exit onto the M50, and there is one single giant hogweed plant.
So can it be spread by road? Are people carrying these things in their cars? Do they do that anywhere?
I would certainly hope they don't. I know I was at a conference on giant hogweed many years ago in Belgium, and the main distribution method there, believe it or not, people collect the old dead plants because they, again, are very, very statuesque. They're tall. And they use them at Christmas. They bring them into their houses at Christmas. And again, they look very impressive. However, how do they get them home? They cut the plant and they tie it to the roof of the car. And as they're travelling along their motorways, the seeds are being dispersed all along the roads. Thankfully, I've never seen that in Ireland. I really hope I never do see that in Ireland because it would be criminal.
Mind you, it's out near Loughlin's, and I know the Loughlinstown River a couple of years ago had certain plants, right. So maybe that came from the Loughlinstown River rather than some maniac bringing it home for Christmas.
Sure.
Because the plants are still containing some amount of sap, so at Christmas time you couldn't be guaranteed that it was completely dried out and you could end up still damaging your skin with your Christmas decorations.
Absolutely correct, yeah. I'd say probably it would be dried out, but I certainly wouldn't like to risk it. The possibility where it gets to locations like that, I would imagine, could it be by birds, animals? I really don't know. It's a curiosity.
I was looking at the insects just landing on the flowers collecting nectar. I mean, that's one thing. But does anything actually eat it? When you were doing your study on it, did anything eat the leaves? Are there any caterpillars? Do cattle, sheep eat it? Do they avoid it? Has it any enemies?
Yeah. The reason it's been so successful is that it has very, very few enemies. And even though it's here over 100 years, you would expect that, you know, herbivory, that there would be something, there'd be something eating it. But we find that the plants beside it, our native hogweed, sometimes grow beside it, they're being eaten, they're being parasitized. Giant hogweed is laughing at it. That's why it's doing so well. Nothing has really targeted it as yet. Whether it's to do with the chemicals in the sap, maybe these bugs don't like it. I'm not sure.
I'd imagine that they wouldn't. So did you come up with a solution then? You spent all these years studying how it worked and the weakest link. When you found the weakest link then, were you able to...
Yeah. What we found fairly quickly is that there's a chemical that you are allowed to use near water. The chemical ingredient is glyphosate. And I'm not sure I'm allowed to use the proprietary name.
I will do, because no one will know what that is.
Okay, okay. Well, it's Roundup Bioactive or Roundup Pro Bioactive. And the reason I say the Bioactive Pro Bioactive, they have clearance on their labels for use in or near watercourses. Your standard Roundup Bioactive at the normal rate will kill this plant very, very effectively. And again, it's typical of many invasive species. I'd work with quite a number of invasive species plants. They don't like being dealt with harshly. So even a small lick of Roundup is enough to kill a very big plant like that. And we're lucky enough to see right beside some of the living plants we have here, plants that have been sprayed with Roundup. I would imagine Dublin City Council were working here.
How do you know they're sprayed with Roundup, that they didn't just sort of get ill? I'm looking at the one you're telling me about now, and it's all bent and curved, and the leaves are a much, much paler yellow.
Absolutely.
Than the living one over there.
Yeah.
So this is a typical result of Roundup, this curving of the branches.
What we're looking at here is exactly Roundup. If I saw that anywhere, I would know Roundup had been used on this. The cure
Surely the trick is to make sure you do this before the fourth year and the flowers come on. This one here with flowers now, it hasn't got seeds yet, but surely an accident waiting to happen again, isn't it?
You're completely correct. The whole idea of a control mechanism is to deplete the seed reserve. Don't allow the seed reserve be renewed. So the first year you come to a river or a catchment, that's probably your most critical year, because what you want to do is treat so many plants that you will have none flowering the following year. It's a four-year program because of the four-year life cycle of the plant.
The new ones will grow the following year from seeds from before, so you do it again and again for four years.
And what we found, because the leaves are so large, that you've got to get in early. You do your first spraying normally in April, when the plants probably are 10 to 15 centimetres high, because if they get much higher, the leaf expands and they'll protect these smaller plants beneath them. So you've got to get them while the leaves are small. It gets in ahead of most native plants. And again, it's a strategy of invasive species. Get in ahead and avoid competition.
Now, apart from damaging people, which is an awful thing and certainly needs to die on account of that alone, does it do any harm to the ecology of riverbanks? Is it having an effect on the bank, on the river? Does it increase erosion or any of that sort of thing? Has it an ecological impact?
It has very significant ecological impacts. Where you have very dense populations, you tend to have very, very little beneath them. And again, it's that very, very dense cover created by the shade. It simply doesn't let light into the bank sides. The bank sides we're looking at here are relatively steep. where that's completely covered with giant hogweed, it will get rid of your native herbaceous species. It will get rid of the grasses that tend to bind the soil during the winter months. So from a biodiversity point of view, it has the capacity to actually eliminate a lot of our herbaceous plants. They die back. Giant hogweed itself dies back in the winter months.
The banks are bare.
The banks are bare. What you have is deep tap roots. They like don't the,
when
bind
you say a tap root,
together.
You mean like a big beetroot or
sugar
a big carrot or a sugar beet.
Sugar
not
beet.
One, not with, not like, say, marum grass with little
That's
roots
right.
everywhere.
It doesn't
this goes straight down.
Straight down.
Yeah.
So it's very, very bad at binding banks together. So during the arose of winter flows, where the herbaceous flora would normally, through that root weft, would normally hold the banks together, that root weft isn't there. So that binding, soil binding capacity is gone. And winter scour will actually erode banks, causing subsidence. But not only that, it's bringing nutrient-rich soil into the river. And where you've a nice river, the Talca used to be a nice river. It was a polluted river. Now it holds trout, salmon, lamprey. You know,
it's kingfishers,
as we saw earlier.
Yeah.
So it's bringing nutrient-rich soil into these watercourses.
Spoiling all that.
So that's adding to eutrophication. But also, you're getting the soil going into the gravels and clogging the gravels.
Yes.
Trout and salmon need clean gravels to spawn.
They get all this muck into their gills and they can't spawn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they also need clean gravels in which to lay their eggs. If they come to an area and the gravels are clogged with soil, they'll simply pass on. So it has the capacity to reduce the salmonid productivity in the river.
Now, when I met you, and we met at the car up there before we came down to the river, and you opened the boot, Lord, I thought it was like a, I don't know what, and we were going to meet some terribly dangerous thing, because you had all kinds of chemicals. You had boots up to your oxters, you had sprays, brushes. I mean, what's all that about?
It's about biosecurity. Where we're dealing with invasive species plants, these are strategists themselves. They know how to get about. And what we've got to be one step ahead of them. And the whole objective of Inland Fishery Ireland's biosecurity campaign is be prepared and prevent the spread of these species. Giant hogweed is here. We know it's here. But you and I are walking along the riverbank, and there's the possibility that in our boots we could pick up seeds, that in the furrows of the boots we could pick up a bit of soil and a seed could be lodged there. We merrily go off, you go your direction, I go my direction, and the next place we're walking we could drop that seed. All you need is one seed to start a new population. So in fisheries we have a protocol, and we're hoping it's going to be adopted widely, where after leaving any watercourse, after any operation, we will disinfect our boots. If we feel, for instance, there's Himalayan balsam on this river here beside us as well, if we feel that we may have been contaminated by seeds, we will brush down our gear. Cleaning and disinfection after every operation is vitally important to stop the spread of invasive species from one watercourse to another.
So what do you need then to disinfect your welly boots, the grooves underneath that would have muck in them?
Well, what we're using, and again, we did some trials on a number of invasive species, not only plants, but some of the Asian clams, zebra mussels. We did some work with Professor Jamie Dick in Queen's University. And the product we came up and we're happiest with is a product called Vircon Aquatic. And it has the capacity to kill these species. And also, we're fisheries people, so you know, there's a lot of parasites that we just simply don't want getting into our fisheries watercourses. And as a disinfectant, it's very, very good also at controlling parasites.
So where do you do it? Do you do it at the bank of the river or when you get back to your car?
Do it as close to the site as possible.
But I mean, surely, you're not the only people that are so intimately associated with the water. You see fishermen with the same sort of boots out fishing with all the best will in the world. Mm. Are they aware of all of this, and do they do this in disinfecting as well?
We're doing our best. I think we're at an early stage. I'd love to get to the stage where New Zealand is, where, yes, they're aware, but not only are they aware, that they will be prosecuted if they don't do it. And I would say we have very, very good relations. We have spoken. They're our key stakeholder group. We've spoken to almost all of the angling clubs, all of the federations in the country. Most of them, I'd have to say, are aware of invasive species. And we've actually developed a kit, which I have in the car there also, that the anglers, the lone angler travelling along the Talca, can bring this kit with him, which has a small little bottle a small number of Virkon tablets, so he can actually disinfect with the minimum of effort prior to leaving a watercourse.
I mean, even if it's only for their own sport, I mean, nobody wants to walk through a whole bank covered in giant hogweed to go fishing, and they won't be able to do this because I presume they know how dangerous these plants are. So even for their own, saving their own sport, never mind anything else, it surely behoves people to, who are going fishing, to make sure they're not spreading it.
That's right. It's the right thing to do. People realise it's the right thing to do. But as with the mull care, when I went down to it maybe 15 years ago, probably 20 years ago at this stage, the river was lined with giant hogweed. And effectively, the club had to virtually disband because the angling club could not advise their anglers to go fishing the river. It was actually too dangerous. So, you know, from that point of view, if we want to avoid that happening here, biosecurity is paramount.
And finally then, for members of the public who are not anglers, who are just, because as we've been standing here, people have been going by with their dogs, and people do like to walk along by the river banks. First of all, I suppose we should make sure that they know what giant hogweed is, and any plant that's bigger than yourself with white flowers on the top, keep away from it, because people sometimes see then ordinary hogweed and then get all of a panic and say, is this the giant hogweed?
Right.
So why would you describe the difference between the ordinary one and the giant one?
Well, the giant tends to be a giant. When it's mature, it's very, very easy to distinguish because, as you say, it'll be taller than you. Most of the native species, they won't go taller than 2 metres. Also, the stem it's much more stringy. While it is ridged, it's stringy. And it doesn't have the very significant red blotching. If you look at the plant that's here beside us, you can see that the stem, it's red-purple blotched. All of the giant hogweed, even the younger ones, have that red blotching. The native species doesn't have it. Also, the leaves of the giant hogweed are very strongly divided. You can see that they're not lobed in any way.
Not like ferns, they're big, fat leaves. Yeah, they are much bigger.
And they're very strongly divided.
And even if you touch the leaf, you could pick up this sap.
Absolutely.
You don't have to actually see liquid coming out of the plant.
No.
Even rub against it, even touch it with your arm,
sure,
you could be in trouble.
Absolutely, yes.
And you'd have blisters then on those places. Every time the sun shines in your arm, these come up again.
There is the risk. It has the capacity. I think some people are a lot more sensitive than others, but it has the capacity to permanently impair the skin's ability to filter sunlight.
And as well, of course, we'll put the pictures of them, Joe, up on our website. We'll put pictures of these plants themselves so people will know what to look out for. We've actually taken a picture of Joe standing beside one so you can actually see how high the plant is. And as well as that, we will put a picture, an awful picture that Joe sent us of somebody's leg where the damage has happened and all of these blisters are obvious on the leg. Nobody would want to incur that. So both of those things will be on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. Well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Joe. And I'm keeping well away from them plants. I'm going back to the car and washing me boots.
Excellent. Good. Thank you, Anna. Yeah.
So be mindful when you're out there. And those details are on the website. Have a look at it so you'll identify it, because it's a pretty nasty burn you get if you come into contact with it. Visit the website, rte.ie/Mooney.